But first, John Hodgman. John is a writer, comedian, and actor. You might remember him from The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. He's also the host of the Judge John Hodgman podcast and the author of several books. His latest is Medallion Status: True Stories from Secret Rooms. The book talks about his unexpected rise to stardom, life after The Daily Show, and his fascination with extinct hockey.
I'm from Massachusetts originally, so I grew up in the close company of Connecticut and the Hartford Whalers.
Yes.
The only major league sport that poor Connecticut ever got.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, lost in the mid-90s. They became the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't come at it. I didn't come at extinct hockey and my fandom of this poor lost team, the Hartford Whalers, through any appreciation of either sports or marine mammals. I came at it because the logo is so striking and beautiful and sort of late 70s in its aesthetic and blocky and interesting and clean. You know, there's a so basically I love hockey for graphic design reasons. You know,
mm-hmm. Because you saw someone, as you write in the book, you saw someone with a Hartford Whalers logo tattoo, right? And you didn't know what it was at the time, right?
Well, I know I remembered the logo from when I was a kid,
mm-hmm.
but I hadn't seen it for a long, long time.
Oh, I see.
It's designed by a guy named Peter Good. He's mm-hmm. still a graphic designer in West Hartford. He and his wife Jan Cummings have a design firm that prior to the Whalers, they had never designed any sports identity of any kind. They only designed like posters for art museums and jazz brunches.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what the Hartford Whalers logo looks like.
Well, yeah.
And it's got this very clean design and it's got this beautiful – I had never realized until I saw this guy with the tattoo and then went to look it up again and remind myself of this logo and its history that there was between the whale's tail – and the W that form the two main graphic images of the design, there is negative space that forms an H.
Yes, it's great use of negative space. It's as you say in the book, I believe, it is one of the best logos. It's right up there. And their use of the use of negative space in that is on par with, I would say, the use of negative space in the FedEx logo, that hidden arrow.
Yeah. That arrow that no one ever sees until you point it out to them. It's like a magic trick.
Exactly, yeah.
Even though I am not a sports fan, I'm willing to go to a sports bar and get into a fight about it. Whereas the Nordiques logo as graphic design, it's the worst. It's so bad, it's beautiful.
Mm, yeah, well said.
It looks like a deformed elephant, but it's supposed to look like an ant.
It does, yeah. Yeah, I'd like to play just a bit of Name That Tune with you. Can you name this tune?
You don't have to play it anymore.
Okay, so you know what it is. What is it?
I knew it from the blah.
So that's
Brass Bonanza.
Yeah, the song that
is the song that they would play when the Hartford Whalers got a goal. You can't come at me with extinct hockey trivia.
But the reason I wanted to come at you with extinct hockey trivia, John, is because I couldn't believe, for me, I guess you're not as crazy about the song as I am, and you're not as crazy as me, period. But why would you not mention it in the book? Did the editor take it out? Or you just...
I didn't find it. Did I not mention it in the book?
No, that's why I thought, Jesus, because is it possible he doesn't know about the, you know?
No, I know.
Okay. I know the I'm glad we settled
Brass
that.
Bonanza. It's a great song.
It's a great song, yeah.
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 You know what? I should have at least put it on the audiobook.
Yeah,
so
you should.
Could
yeah,
hear
absolutely.
It, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Anyway. When
the Hurricanes play wearing Hartford Whalers.
Yes, occasionally. Yeah, that's like a third jersey.
Just to ice skate on their grave, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And you know why they do that? Because of you. You don't follow the trends. You set the trends.
Look, Peter Good made the logo.
Yeah.
This other guy got the tattoo. Got me thinking about it. Then I started talking about it and wearing it. I can't say that I'm single-handedly responsible for the.
I think you could. You're just too modest.
The success of the extinct Hartford Whalers.
Oh, you're just too humble and modest. But anyway, let's move from lake ice hockey now to the title of your latest book, Medallion Status, now available
Medallion
at bookstores
Status.
Everywhere. Also available on audiobook, read by John Hodgman.
Hodgman.
Exactly. Yeah. So where does the title come from?
Well, it is literally to the point that I was worried that I would get a cease and desist letter. It is a reference to Delta Airlines' loyalty program. The more you fly with any airline, obviously you know they want to keep you flying with them, so they award you what are called miles, which mm-hmm. you can then trade in for nothing, basically.
Like, yeah.
If you have 1 million miles, you might be able to get a one-way ticket to Toledo for free. But they also award you a separate brand of miles in Delta, in particular, called medallion qualifying miles. And so medallion status is a legitimate, you know, medallion status is a direct reference to this loyalty program, but it also becomes in the book a metaphor for being seen. You know, I used to be on television on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart when it was The Daily Show with Jon Stewart before Trevor Noah and mm-hmm. took over the program so ably. And this is one of the most recognizable and rightly so television shows in the nation, if not the world. And so I spent a lot of time being recognized in a way that I never expected to. Anyone who has ever looked at my face will know that my on-camera career is wildly implausible. Basically, I went on the show to promote my book, and John kidnapped me and put me on television for the next 9 years.
I guess, welcome to the show, John Hodgman. John Hodgman, everybody.
Nice to see you, John. Good to see you. Thanks for stopping by
and
joining us.
And now? Is the camera on me? Good.
Yes.
Thank you. John, the reason I called you here today...
Well, I'm here every day. It's my show, so I'm here. It's not like you...
Please, John, this is hard enough without your blubbering. I have something to say. I've been appearing on this show for almost 10 years now, and this show doesn't deserve an even slightly restless, deranged billionaire.
What?
And so I'm moving on.
Really?
The point is, I'm retiring to an exclusive gated community.
Wow, you're going to Florida?
But no, John, an exclusive gated community on Mars. But, you know, people stopping me on the street saying it's John Hodgman became part of my life. And that was part of the way I came to understand how important it and how powerful it is to be seen
mm-hmm.
and acknowledged and mm-hmm. recognized, and how rare it is that in most people's lives, they're never seen and they're never recognized for who they are or want to be, often not even within their own families.
Mm-hmm.
So the medallion status becomes a metaphor for something bigger that I'm trying to explore in the book, as well as also just telling funny stories of my life.
Mm-hmm. You're not, as you mentioned, you're not on television anymore. I'm curious, what do you miss most about acting? Or do you
snacks.
Miss anything?
The snacks.
The snacks? Tell me about why.
What's so great? Craft services.
About? Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite craft service snack?
You know, cubes of cheese.
Mm-hmm.
Look, this is part of the reason why I love the airline exclusive sky lounges, you know, because
mm-hmm.
they often have trays of cubed cheese for me. That's mm-hmm. one of the greatest things that can happen
in
my life.
Yeah, and as you say, as you write in your book, the sky lounge is not aspirational. It is desperational. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, being on television, even at the very minor level of fame that I had, it affords you all kinds of entree into exclusive parties, secret societies, hidden rooms, private clubs, and these sky clubs being kind of the most accessible of them. These secret societies where sad business dads meet and drink, you know, a Bud Light at 10 a.m. in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a place for people who are terrified of death because they're about to get into a multi-ton tube full of people and their farts and float above the earth impossibly for hours on end to load up on something to make them less scared.
Yeah.
And that's why I say that the sky clubs, you know, the sky clubs are not aspirational like so many other secret clubs. They are actually desperational.
You're
they're
right.
a place to hide and feel nervous in.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Well, one of my favorite chapters in your book is called Disney Jail. Can you tell me the story behind Disney Jail?
Yeah, so, you know, to pay for the time that I had spent away and in an attempt to regain their love, I took my kids to Disneyland. And as we were walking through Disneyland, I met an actor who actually is a cast member at Disneyland sometimes. He works there. And he mentioned casually in passing Disney Jail. And both my son and I were like, hold on, stop walking. What are you talking about? What is Disney Jail? And it's like, that's the place where we take the people at Disneyland who get out of hand. Maybe they're having a hard day or they got real drunk and stood up naked on a Dumbo or something. I don't know. And my son and I were fascinated with Disney Jail. We're like, what does it look like? Is it like in the back of the fake police station in Main Street, USA? Who goes there? Why do they go there? And then my son asked me a question. hypothetically, what if you had to go down? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you had to go to Disney jail, what would be the best way to go out? Like, what would be the thing to do in order to get out?
Yeah.
And my son, we had a couple of different things about, you know, standing up in the Pirates of the Caribbean and, you know, screaming at the animatronics, abominations, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
My son had one that was great, which is like, what if I wander by myself into Fantasyland and in tears, crying for my mommy and daddy? Because he knew, and I knew, and maybe some of your listeners know, that in Fantasyland, you know, that's where the Snow White stuff is, right?
Yes.
And on a second floor window in Fantasyland, every now and then an animatronic evil queen will part the curtains and look out over the land,
mm-hmm.
and then close the curtains. And only people who are in the know this, right? So my son was like, what if I go out into the middle of Fantasyland crying, where's my mommy? Where's my mommy? Until some nice family goes, we'll help you find your mommy. And then my son will look up and point at that window as the curtains part and sees the animatronic and goes, no, that's my mommy. I've brought another family for you, mommy. That was my son's joke.
That's
He's 11
great.
Years old. It's incredible.
Takes after the old man. I have a thought experiment for you. If, nay, when you were to have your own theme park called, I don't know, let's say Hodgman Land, what kinds of lands and attractions would it feature?
I know exactly where it would happen.
Where would it happen?
Well, I host a podcast called Judge John Hodgman.
Yes,
And the podcast is sort of my humorous riff on a Judge Judy type show.
Mm-hmm.
People call in with actual disputes, and I resolve them, and I say who's right and who's wrong. And one time, a couple called in from Germany, and their dispute was over whether or not to get an air conditioner because the boyfriend in this heterosexual couple who grew up in Germany had never had an air conditioner and thought they were stupid. And the girlfriend in this couple had only had air conditioners and she wanted one. So it was a cultural issue. But all of that is boring and mm-hmm. became instantly boring to me when the guy mentioned that they almost visited a former Zeppelin hangar that has been turned into a massive indoor water park.
Ah.
And I was like, how dare you not go?
Yeah.
How dare you not go to that?
Yeah.
Because it's this massive dome that has its own world inside of it. I think you can even take a hot air balloon inside of the dome. Like, and it was a Zeppelin factory. It was touching a lot of buttons for me in terms of esoteric mm-hmm. culture. And my dream at that moment was not to make a John Hodgman land, but instead to create one of my favorite movies is Moonrise Kingdom. One of my favorite directors is Wes mm-hmm. Anderson.
Yes.
And so many of his movies are essentially theme parks.
Yes.
They're highly and carefully themed onto like the precise height of the tube socks that they wear in the Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou.
Yes.
And I was just like, I would like to create a Wes Anderson themed theme park. Because if you had a Wes Anderson themed theme park, it would be the culmination of his work, I think,
mm-hmm.
that you could actually go and live in this weird, eccentric, white, 13-year-old, pretentious nerd's head. But also you could call it either Wes Anderson Land, or Wes Anderland.
Oh, that's nice.
Or you could call it Westworld.
Oh, like that's very nice. That's
See
perfect.
What I mean?
Yeah, beautiful.
So that's the idea. I can't think of anything besides that. That's the only theme park idea I've got in my head. What would happen in John Hodgman Land? There would be a recreation of Brookline, Massachusetts, where I grew up, and there would be the Coolidge Corner Movie Theater where I worked and became a fan of filmed entertainment.
Special status lands that only high status people would be able to get into. Hodgman Land would be the statusiest place on earth.
Disneyland has its secret Club 33 that you can only join. You can only attend if you're a member, and I would have like Club 34.
Yeah, like, and flight attendants of the Caribbean, the Hall of Hobos. You got to have the Hall of Hobos.
See, this is the thing. You are already thinking about it.
I know.
Why did you ask me this question? You wanted to answer the question.
No, I wanted to collaborate.
I'm
very flattered. But anyway, I have one final question about, as you mentioned, you have this Judge John Hodgman podcast. And speaking of that, just so happens that a few years ago, Wisconsin Public Radio's very own radio operations manager, Aubrey Ralph, submitted their very own pressing issue. And here's a clip.
Oh.
Aubrey writes, my partner Ginger and I have a long-running argument. Is it okay to go into a restaurant that's 10 minutes from the official closing time? Ginger thinks it's a huge burden to the waitstaff to have a patron come in just before closing. I spent about 10 years in food service. On a slow night, latecomers can be a little annoying, but it's all just part of the job. Plus, people who come in late are often great tippers. I say that if a restaurant wanted to have all patrons out by 10 or whenever, they should have set an earlier closing time. Judge Hodgman, please settle this for us.
Well, first of all, Aubrey and Ginger, your names are delightful and I would think fictional.
Mm-hmm.
You sound like a pair of snakes in a children's book. And the two snakes go to the restaurant and it's 10 minutes before closing and the host or hostess at the restaurant looks at them and goes, "This is why everyone thinks snakes are jerks. Don't go to a restaurant 10 minutes before closing and order a full meal. I don't care how long you worked in food service. You should know better." Sorry, Aubrey.
I can assure you that Aubrey and Ginger's names are not fictional, and they are not snakes.
This is a colleague of yours. That's
right,
wonderful.
Right, yeah. He's in the control room right now, but can Aubrey appeal your verdict to the Hodgman Court of Appeals or Supreme Court? Is there any mechanism in place?
No, there is no. There is no. My justice is final.
Okay.
And also, but Aubrey should take heart because my justice is also unenforceable. It's a podcast. Who cares? Nothing's going to happen. I mean, basically, the Judge John Hodgman podcast, while it can be very hard and fast with regard to social conventions, etiquette, how people relate to each other in relationships, the most important thing I hope that people take away from the Judge John Hodgman podcast is that people should, rather than trying to ascertain rules, because rules allow you to move through the world without talking to other people or negotiating your space with other people, but instead be open and discuss whatever the issue might be. So, you know, lots of people call in, they're like, "I need a hard and fast rule about whether it's okay just this one example, you know, like to go in to a restaurant really late." And if I say, "Yeah, it's fine," that's not going to make the kitchen staff happy when you actually go and do it, Aubrey. They're going to be mad. And you're going to say, like, "Guess what? There is a rule on the podcast." Like, they're not going to work for them.
Yeah.
Instead, I try to coax out these conflicts that are sometimes seem very superficial, but there's deep stuff behind them, and generally encourage people to just talk to other human beings and hear their point of view.
Exactly. Very well said. John Hodgman, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
John Hodgman is a writer, actor, comedian, and the host of the Judge John Hodgman podcast. His latest book is called Medallion Status: True Stories from Secret Rooms. Find out more about John at wpr.org/beta.
When she said in December 2000 to Diane Sawyer, "I am mentally ill, I can say that," that broke some barriers. It really did. It relieved a lot of people who were, especially women, who were hiding what they had and would stay home from work and make excuses.
Author Sheila Weller joins us to talk about the life and career of Carrie Fisher. That's coming up in a minute. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.